some jealous neighbour was sending him a very clear message, a very Hesiodic message. We are in competition and I don't like your success. This notion that life is a kind of zero-sum game, if I win, you lose, and if you win, I lose, is absolutely at the core of all Greek affairs. It is at the core of their conception of drama. It is at the core of their conception of interstate rivalries and politics. It will come to the fore in the 5th century in the catastrophic war between the Athenians and the Spartans. And I believe it also deeply informs daily life, the way people think about their neighbours, the way they think about their democracy or their state. In other words, if some other group advocates a certain policy, we must oppose it, simply because they are our opponents. The Greeks then became completely addicted to this notion of strife, a kind of rugby principle of life. If you see ahead, kick it. And it became then, I think, most important for there to be some mechanism, some institution, some cultural form that would allow them to move beyond this. Now, within states, that was partly affected by the growth of democracy, where at least free speech allowed people to share their ideas. And the democracy, in fact, did allay some of the competitive strife which had been affecting the world of archaic Greece and the aristocratic rivalry of factions within city-states. But at the international level, the Greeks never really reached a point of being able to find a mechanism to get beyond this model of endless competition. The nearest they would get to it would be Delphi on a permanent basis. And then beyond that, during times of absolute crisis, temporary leagues would be formed. So, for example, when the Persians invaded, temporarily the Greeks were able to bury their differences and to fight off the Persian foe. But I think it's very instructive to note that when the Persians invaded, the Greeks knew of the coming invasion for years, and it was only in the final months, as the Persians were descending into Greece, that they were able to bury their differences and form a united front opposing the Persians. Even then, they withdrew from northern Greece, they withdrew from central Greece, unable to form a united policy. And if Herodotus is to be trusted, the only way that the Greeks were ever able to bury their differences sufficiently to face the Persians in battle at Salamis was when they were tricked into it by Themistocles, who sent a message to the Persians so that they would block both ends of the channel at Salamis and make it impossible for the Greeks to escape and force them to fight. So I think this is really going to be a central feature of Greek life. It's a theme that we're going to be emphasizing more in the coming lectures, but I want you to pay close attention to the conditions under which it is formulated here in the 8th century. In previous lectures, we've asked the question, to what extent did the Bronze Age continue to influence the affairs of the Greeks? And I've suggested that continuity is a very difficult concept to quantify. I go further now and say it is really the 8th century, which is the critical period in the formulation of Greek culture. It is now that we find the emergence of the city-states. It is now that we see the Greeks being heavily influenced by the ancient Near East. It is now that we find the Greeks formulating once and for all the notion that to be Greek means to be in competition with the other Greeks. And it is now that we find the Greeks also formulating the idea of Pan-Hellenism, the idea that despite our differences, at some level, culturally, linguistically, and even in our blood, we are all Greeks.